All right, well, we're going to go ahead and get started. Before I actually start with the program, a couple of housekeeping things. We are recording this session so we can download it as a podcast for distance learners and students who weren't able to attend. So if you want to be anonymous, just don't say your name. If there's a comment you don't want recorded, or let me know after the program and we can always edit it out. I'm Sherry Williams. I'm the Assistant Director of Career Services. One other thing I want to do is always put in a plug for Career Services. We do offer several programs, and we appreciate you attending the last one for this week, for Career Week. Now, next week, we're having some career days. The one here in Benton is on Wednesday, October 27th. It's a professional career expo in Hubbard Hall from 12 to 3:30. Inside the front cover of your booklet, there's a little brochure, and on the right side, it tells you about the career days. So we hope to see you there if you're looking for a job or an internship, or if you're just trying to explore some different career options. We'll have additional seminars in November. Those are listed on the right inside flap of this brochure as well. So we hope to see you at some of those also. So without further ado, I want to introduce our speaker, Mr. Dennis Hovind. He works in information technology services, and he is the manager of information security. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And he has presented for us for several years. We really appreciate him. He's done some training and presentations and these kinds of things back when he was working in the military. So he's going to give us some good tips today on effective communication skills. So please join me in welcoming Mr. Dennis Hovind.
Well, certainly hope everyone's doing wonderful today. I know I am. It's a small crowd, but it's going to be a fun and entertaining hour. So feel free to stop me and ask questions at any time. So today's session, Do It Right, Say It Right, Developing Appropriate Communication Skills. Our overview, first and foremost, we're going to take a look at effective listening. We have to start there because if you're not hearing the message, well, then of course things go downhill from there. As a few commanders I've worked with used to say, God gave us two ears and only one mouth for a reason. You're supposed to listen twice as hard as you speak. Next, we're going to get into business writing tips, and then we're going to finish today with electronic communication tips. Let's start effective listening off with what's known as real versus pseudo listening. We'll move from there into blocks to listening, and then finally take a look at four steps to effective listening. So with real versus pseudo listening, this little diagram says it's hard to listen with a big stinky ego. Do this for our podcast, understanding that some folks will be listening to this instead of seeing it. But it says it's hard to listen with a big stinky ego. And it says me, 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 me. So if it's all about you, you have to understand and we need to redesign the way that you're behaving. So real listening. Real listening is a commitment and it's a compliment. Why is it a commitment? First and foremost, you're putting aside your own prejudices. Putting aside any beliefs, anxieties, self-interests, and this is so you can sincerely understand another person's perspective. It's a compliment because you're doing this by saying, I care enough about you to give you my full and undivided attention. So real listening is a commitment and it's a compliment. Real listening is based on a person's intention. What is your intention? If you're really listening, number one, you're truly trying to understand someone. Pretty easy. But you're also enjoying someone for what they have to say, and probably to include who they are. So who they are and what they have to say. But you're also really listening because you want to learn something. And number four, based on intention, you're giving help or solace. So you want to be there in the moment with a person. Whatever he or she is experiencing, you're really listening because you want to actually have them feel you in the moment, present with them. Pseudo-listening masquerades as the real thing. We'll get into more examples here as we move along. The intention here is not to listen. There's some other need that you need to meet. So it's a very self-interest item when you're pseudo-listening. When you're pseudo-listening, you're making people think that you're interested so that they'll like you. And as you look at some of these bullets, you may reflect on conversations that you've had with folks as I go through these. But also pseudo-listeners are not alert to their environment. In fact, they're only alert to see if they're in danger of getting either rejected or detected. Detected means, I don't know, they're only listening to see how far they're getting with you in their lie or their false truth, their white lie, if you want to call it that. They're listening for one specific piece of information and then maybe potentially ignoring the rest. So pseudo-listeners are going through these in their head. It's quite possible they're just buying time to prepare for either your next comment or their next comment. And they're potentially half listening so that someone will actually, just so that you feel that someone's actually listening. So it's actually going through half listening. Five more items here, masquerading as the real thing. Listening to find someone's vulnerabilities just to take advantage. It's one indication of pseudo-listening. They're looking for some kind of angle to take advantage of an individual. They're also looking for weak points in an argument, because these are folks who always want to be right. They're listening to gain ammunition for an attack, either very quickly or later on down the road. They're listening to check to see how many people are reacting to make sure that they're producing the desired effect. They're also half-listening simply because they know that you are a kind-hearted person. So maybe they're just doing it to kind of save your feelings, but we can see how damaging that will be later on. They're also half-listening because, well, they don't know how to get away. So it's kind of tying to the number nine there because they're kind-hearted, but they don't know how to get away from the situation. So maybe you've been pulled into a conversation, you're not real comfortable with it, you're half-listening, you really don't know how to get away because some of it might be tied to limited assertiveness skills, or what I have on there, a level of emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence is a different category, but it's simply put, you haven't experienced that environment, that reaction, so you don't know how to deal with it, and so you just will stay there half listening to be involved, kind of hard. But from there, we want to go into blocks to listening. So what are blocks? Well, we have 12. Everyone has one or several. Most people are not even aware they have them. You may be aware once we start talking about them. Some know that they have them, and they know very well how to use them. Use them to their advantage, so they have their favors depending on the situation. So now we get into some fun stuff. Let's take a look and see which blocks to listening you use. The first one we have here is comparing. All right, you're not listening because you're actually trying to assess who's smarter, or maybe who's more competent, or maybe who's sicker, or who's suffered more. So here's an example here. So someone was talking about what a rough day they had, and your response is, oh, you think you know what tough is? Let me tell you what tough is. You know, you heard the story about how to walk both ways uphill to school back in the day, so everyone's had it tougher than you've had it. They're just trying to express maybe how their day is going, but you're comparing it to yours already. So maybe the whole idea was they're trying to share something else with you, but your block to listening is it's comparing, and you get off on the wrong track. And you don't have to raise your hand if you are any of these. You can smile real big or kind of give me a nod. So I can either think that's either you or somebody who you know very well. I'll tell you which one's me. This was my grandparents right here comparing. My goodness. It was with the one that's sick. If anything about illnesses came up, oh, look out. The whole list of medical history came with it on their side. Okay. It's time to let me go move along. All right. Mind reading. So the mind reader's not listening because they're not very trusting of the other person. They're possibly ruminating over the other person's words so that they could maybe relate or anticipate what that person is thinking. So an example is, yes, I know that I heard you say this, but I think what you really meant was something else. So the mind reader is trying to tap into your brain going, I know that person's not saying what I think they're saying. And so what they're just pretty much anticipating some other thought process. But it kind of stems from maybe lack of trust. Maybe the word choices, maybe a word choice triggers someone to go into that mind reading mode. So if this is your particular block, kind of understand and pull back for a moment. I haven't met any mind readers. Not that they don't exist, but probably less than 0.5% on the planet are mind readers successfully. Okay. I do not fall under this category. Rehearsing. Okay. You don't have time to listen because you're creating your comeback response to a previous comment. If he says this, I'll say this. And then if this happens, I'm going to say this. And then I'm going to respond to this because I know that the next person's going to say this. This gets really complicated if it's more than just one person and now you're in a group. Man, that's mentally exhausting by the time you're finished with that conversation. And you still haven't heard anything because you've gone through and you've rehearsed every comment before he or she has finished what they wanted to say. I have been known to have this listening block in the past. Hopefully I still don't use it. Filtering. Okay. I'm good at this one. You only listen to some things and not other things. All right, so this is probably one of the more common ones that you've either seen or heard around. Right? Selective listening, filtering, and then there's the classic. I'm going to listen as long as the information I'm hearing is positive. It's what I want to hear. Once it becomes something I don't want to hear, blah, 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 blah. Might as well be Charlie Brown's teacher, and all you hear is wah, wah, wah. Filtering, classic one right there. I've been known for that one on occasion. Judging. You're not listening because you've already declared that someone else, that other person, is stupid, incompetent, or perhaps unqualified. And you may have already prejudged this person without even met this person because of a rumor or something else that someone said about this person. So you're already not giving them enough credibility to listen because your block to listening there is judging. I don't think I've fallen into this category in the past. Dreaming. This is what students do all the time. Half listening because a word or a chain of words triggers some other tangential thought into their day. So regardless of the subject, whatever word happens to come out of the instructor's mouth, there you are off in your dream world thinking about life after class is over or the weekend or what's going to happen over the next break. All right, but certainly overdone, the person that you're communicating with will certainly get the impression that you don't care. Not a good thing. Identifying. In this block, you're not listening because everything the person's telling you relates to his or her own experience. All right, so here you go. You're launching into your stories, right, by someone else was trying to relay a message. So what you've done is you've already interrupted and gone off and told your story about what happened when you went on that trip to Colorado, really had nothing to do with what the individual was trying to relate to you. Advising. Ooh, okay. This one, certainly I've been a victim of in the past. Jumping into a solution before he or she can even finish telling you what they even started. Probably classic IT syndrome right here with advising. Because we think we have solutions to everything right away. I see a lot of head nodding, yes, yes. We didn't hear a thing that you said up front in complete sentences because at first indication of the problem, we went right into problem-solving mode. All right, because I know we have a few IT in the crowd. I have to say that sometimes we need to step back. Let the problem-solving mode step off to the side so that we can clearly listen to what the problem is, full and complete, and ask questions. Sparring, on occasion in the past, I think in my younger days, I was a little bit more feisty, I guess. So there's no way you're listening because you're constantly arguing and debating with the other person. Got a real good friend who's good at this one. They don't hear what you're saying because they're already in a sparring match with you. And sometimes they're doing it just because it's fun. They enjoy this. So this is where they live. It aggravates the heck out of everyone else, but they're enjoying the fact that they're getting under your skin because of the sparring. It doesn't matter whether they're right or wrong. It's the sparring match that they enjoy. I won't tell you who it is because I know that you know that person. Being right. Here's another block. It's obvious you're not listening because you're saying anything and everything just to be right. I'm going to say this is classic between me and my wife. All right. So yes, possibly between spouses, this is a huge one. And oftentimes, when I realize I'm wrong, I have to go crawling back and humbly. So it's quite obvious with this block that you are oblivious to any suggestions. Your mind can't be changed, one-track mind, until you've had time to relax and reflect. But being right is a block to listen. Derailing, here's a block that comes from changing the direction of the conversation. So maybe you're not comfortable with the topic, so you'll put it off in a different direction, into an area that's more in your comfort zone. And in some cases, it's the individual making jokes when addressing a serious matter. And they're not real comfortable there, so they have to go into a different mode, kind of take the conversation down a different path. That's derailing. Placating. So, right, with placating, you're agreeing with everything, because you're half listening, just to give the appearance that you're being supportive. And so yes, it is a communication skill and style to chime in occasionally, say yes, okay, go on, I agree, but placating is doing it in a way it's like, yeah. So you've got the guy in the background trying to do something on the computer, the girl up front looks really annoyed because she's trying to say something, she's going, yeah, right, go ahead. So, and this can happen in a number of different scenarios. That could be someone watching TV, same thing is going on. You're really not listening, but you want to try to pretend like you're there.
Really?
Yes. Absolutely. All right, so how are we going to effectively listen? Well, there's four steps. First step is to learn active listening. Look at listening with empathy, listening with openness, and listening with awareness. Taking a look at each one individually, active listening states that you're paraphrasing. You will state in your words what you heard someone said or how you understood what they said. So certainly an individual is going to know you're listening if you can say some comments back and say, really, what I understood you to say was this. Am I correct? And you can say yes or no. No, that's not it. What I meant was this. Clarifying, similar to paraphrasing, except you're asking questions until you understand the meaning. So starting off with paraphrasing, and then you can clarify. Oh, you didn't mean that, you meant this? I understand. You're asking some questions. And then you're getting some feedback, right? So actively listening is providing feedback and a shared experience of what you thought, felt, or sensed during the conversation. Even if we're taking into consideration body language and tone. You know, it looks like you're really upset. Maybe facial expressions. So you're asking those questions. Are you upset? No. Well, by the tone of your voice, it sounds like you're upset. So not only your facial expressions, your tone makes it seem like you're upset. Correct me if I'm wrong. You want to also listen with empathy. Now, here's your ability to put aside your feelings so that you can understand the message that the other person is sending. So don't confuse empathy with sympathy. Empathy is just trying to understand from the other person's point of view. to do whatever it takes with paraphrasing and clarifying and feedback to get to the point where you're trying to understand from another person's point of view. You don't have to like everyone, and you don't have to agree with everyone. You just have to recognize that everyone shares similar struggles and put yourself in that position. So consider the following when you're listening with empathy. From where is that emotion originating? You don't have to get that person to answer it, but you're trying to think in your mind, this person's upset or angry about something or excited about something. What might be the cause of this? What danger or threat is this person experiencing or perceiving? Is this real or perceived? And what exactly is he or she asking? What exactly is the result they want to achieve? If you're listening with openness, you're not judging or finding faults. Those are tied to barriers to listening. So be certainly be cautious of judging as we relate back to that barrier. So consider the following. If you're judging, you're certainly not open. If you're judging your opinions, if they are proven false, you're going to be the last to know, and it's going to be very embarrassing for you. You won't grow intellectually because you haven't given yourself the opportunity to listen to other viewpoints other than your own. You dismiss worthwhile people because you disagree with their ideas when you judge. And you turn people off because you're sparring and you don't listen. So this is really tied to a lot of other blocks to listening. So you want to release yourself from those blocks so that you can be open. And awareness is very similar. Without judging, compare what's being said to your own knowledge, history, and understanding of people. Use your senses. Don't just hear the words. You need to observe the behavior. Does the person's tone of voice, emphasis, facial expressions, posture, mood, their affect, does it all fit with the content of their communication? Is it all congruent? Does it all fit together? Or is something not match? You know, if someone's saying that they lost a loved one and they're chuckling and giggling, that mood is not congruent with the situation of or what's going on. So you really have to kind of be aware of some consistency in all these areas. I know my oldest sister, Robin, used to laugh when I got hurt. So, yeah. That was one of those people that you could probably have to go through some of these areas and take a look at their affect in relationship to the situation. Here I am falling down the stairs, and we had wooden stairs, and so my rear end of my head hitting every stair, and I'm like, are you okay? You should have seen your face, Robin. I'm really hurt right now. You should have seen your face. I'm really hurt right now. I probably should go see a doctor. But that was so funny. I think I should go to the doctor. But you should have seen your face. Good times. All right, total listening. How to be a total listener. Number one, maintain good eye contact. Lean slightly forward. Reinforce your attention to the speaker by nodding and paraphrasing. We did say that's appropriate. Clarify by asking questions. Move any distractions away from you. All right? Don't be like my father. I'm trying to have a conversation, whether it's either in real life or over the phone. I know when he's watching TV. Yeah. Turn the TV off. I've got something to say to you. Because he can't focus. Yeah, turn the TV off. I'm probably just as bad. I just don't know it because no one said, hey, turn the TV off.
That sounds like my little boy in a way. It was time to do homework. We turned the TV off. Said, no, Mom, I can concentrate and do the homework.
No.
And listen. No, you can't. The TV's going off.
Sure. And, you know, and you mentioned with school, I think learning how to listen can certainly help you in school, in class, especially if you recognize your blocks to listening. Also recognize the tips here for total listening. So remove those distractions. Be committed to understanding the other person or instructor, even if you are upset, angry, distressed. Sort of have to put personal issues aside to pay attention to details of the moment. And you can do that. Everyone's capable of that. You have to almost do that if you want to be successful in class. All right, moving on, we've got business writing tips. So now we're taking a look at some things to hopefully make you successful or even more successful in business. How do you improve your professional writing? Eat your grammar O's. All right, so for the podcast, here's a big picture of a cereal box with a bowl of what looks like Cheerios, but it's called Grammar O's. I thought that was cute. Proven to help improve grammar and spelling. I wish it were that easy. Eat your Grammar O's. Okay, so what I have down here are the B's of effective communication. First and foremost, be focused. So whether you're writing or giving speeches, address the issue, the whole issue, and nothing but the issue. Be organized. Systematically present your information and ideas. Be clear. Communicate with clarity, making each word count. Make it seem like you've got to pay a dollar for every word. So how can you be more clear and concise if each word's going to cost you a buck? Be understanding. Have an understanding of your audience and their expectations. And be supportive. Use logic, detail, any supportive material you have to make your point. Let's start with being focused. So in business, we say address the issue, the whole issue, nothing but the issue. In academics, address the question, the whole question, and nothing but the question. This failure to focus here comes in these three forms. Number one, answering the wrong issue or question. Number two, only answering part of the issue or question, and that one drives me nuts. So I can already say in business, this one drives me crazy, answering only part of the issue or the question, especially when I know that the person is avoiding the other half, avoiding telling me the other half because the other half is bad. So I'm only getting partial right there. Or adding irrelevant information. Maybe because he or she doesn't have all the information, so what they give you is irrelevant. That's going to tick off your teachers and supervisors. So there you go. Being organized means you present your material in a logic, systematic manner. Probably have gotten this from other classes. This is just going to reinforce this. Your audience understands you without reading your material multiple times. So I've been able to go through it, very good logic flow and organization. If it's unorganized, the audience can become easily confused. They become frustrated, potentially stop reading or listening to you altogether. And then, of course, they may underestimate the value of your material and your credibility if it's not organized. Okay? Being understanding. Understand your audience and their expectations. Number one, to share an idea. So you're trying to get them to understand their current knowledge, views, and interests in the topic. All right. So to share that idea, you've got to have an understanding of all that. What's their current knowledge? What are their views? What's their interest in this topic? I'm hoping the interest in this topic is high for everyone while you're here. I'm hoping. You might be here for extra credit. That's okay, too. But I'm hoping it's because you thought, well, I want a little advantage, a little kickstart, something to separate me out from the pack. When you're writing a report, understand the expected format, length, level of formality, and any other requirements. This could come in business, but primarily we're talking about education here because your teacher will probably have format or style, MLA or APA, which has some criteria. You'll need to know that. More importantly, provide that. Otherwise, you're going to get points taken off. Being supportive. Support and logic are tools that build credibility and trust with the audience. So this is where your support and logic need to be crystal clear. Nothing will cripple a perfect paper or a flawless speech quicker than faulty logic and a lack of support to make your point. So all it has is just a high emotional appeal and no substance. And everyone in the audience kind of starts going, I'm just getting a bunch of words here. There's really no meat to this. So you'll lose those folks very quick if you don't have supportive material. All right, so we look at seven quick steps to be an effective communicator. Again, this part right here is just review. You may have seen this multiple times, but it's a great review. First and foremost, analyze the purpose and your audience. Research your topic very thoroughly. Support your ideas, very critical. Outline and organize. Do a draft, edit it, and finally, fight for feedback and get approval. This is critical, right down here. And the folks that we taught at Leadership School at the Air Force Academy and at Airman Leadership School, we made each and every student get feedback from three other students in the class before he or she turned in a finished product. That was a standard that we set in our academic environment. All right, and we certainly made them get a student initial their paper that they provided feedback. What we did find out we were doing early on is what we were getting is we were getting supportive feedback. Oh, it looks good, great job. Yep, looks good to me too. Great, turn it in. That's the feedback. So the person says, okay, well, my paper's great. I'm gonna turn it in as is. Well, the person giving feedback, or the three individuals giving feedback, really didn't care about the feedback because that actually took work to review this. So what we're saying is, you don't have to rewrite it for them. Just say, gosh, I didn't understand it. Where were your supporting ideas? It didn't seem to me like it was organized. So we were telling them, you don't have to rewrite it for them. That's not what we're asking. But what we're asking is, did it make sense to you? Were there any obvious grammatical errors? Were there any obvious spelling errors? So hopefully the folks who you ask for feedback, you're friends enough with that they'll actually give you honest and true feedback. And you should have thick skin to take constructive criticism here. Certainly, if you give me something for me to review, I will review it, and results good or bad, I'll certainly give you my feedback, and whether you use it or not, obviously, is an adult decision, and you can go from there. But I would encourage you to fight for feedback and get approval. We certainly make a habit of this when we do our emails, especially if it's a critical email that we need to send off. I'm going to talk about electronic communication in a minute, but I want to stress the importance of this, because when you start to use email for business, this becomes very critical. Get the feedback before you hit send, because yes, I know there's an unsend button, but more than likely, the email's already gone through, it's already been sent. So the person probably already is going to see that, or the group. Okay, so we want to have some comparisons, academic versus business. So the role of a reader in academic versus business. On the academic side, the reader is in a teaching moment. In business, they are in a learning moment. All right, so we're talking about in the academic setting, this is your instructor receiving this, maybe this paper that you produced. So in the academic structure, that person knows the right answer, often understands your meaning, even if it isn't entirely clear. But on the business side, that person receiving or reading your material does not necessarily know the right answer, so probably does not understand anything if your writing is unclear. Big difference there. Okay, on the academic side, the instructor wants to see you use new vocabulary and that you're using new concepts that he or she taught and applying them. But on the business side, the reader is trying to say, without effort, I want to understand the information you're sending me is accurate. I want to be able to understand it when I read it, but I also need to know that it's accurate. On the academic side, there are expectations, there are deadlines to be met, but on occasion, they can be flexible, and there's awards for partial credit if they're not complete. Not so much on the business side. Right? On the business side, we're expecting to have something delivered promptly, courteously, and with really no exception for excuses. It was on time or it was not on time. The excuse is irrelevant. The dog eating the homework does not fly. On the academic side, it's possible. I know that there's group projects, but traditionally, they're going to discourage collaboration because that's called cheating. On the business side, it's not called cheating. It's called using all your resources. I'm not talking about plagiarism. I'm just saying it's discussing amongst a group to come up with the best solution for a problem, perhaps. So it's not called cheating, it's gathering information. On the academic side, the receiver or the reader must read the document for a grade. All right, that's you getting a grade. On the business side, that person in charge, CEO perhaps, may not even get past the second sentence. After all that work you did, if there's not powerful introduction, something to motivate that person to want to continue reading, in the garbage. Okay? So there are some differences there from the reader's perspective. Now, from the writer's perspective, there are also some other differences. So on the academic side, the writer is in a scenario where they are actually the learner. And on the business side, I might be writing for perhaps a teaching moment or a persuading moment or just for sending information. Just put teaching up there just to be brief. On the academic side, the writer is perhaps not conveying any real information. Perhaps they are, if it's a particular study. On the business side, I certainly am conveying information for possibly business decisions and so forth. On the academic side, expected to show knowledge of vocabulary, concepts, and applications. On the business side, the expectation is to simply be accurate and clear. On the academic side, the topic is often from personal experience, literature, or something involving choice. Maybe the topic was given to the writer. On the business side, the topic might be dictated by your client, customer, or supervisor. It usually seldom involves choice. So just some subtle differences there. Again, we talked about partial credit. So on the academic side, your writing might receive partial credit. But on the business side, accuracy is critical. So there's no credit for almost right. In today's world, you almost don't keep your job for almost right. On the academic side, length of writing is usually assigned. And on the business side, the writing length is normally not provided. It's just up to you to make it clear and concise and hopefully consolidate it so that it's not too much to have to go through. On the academic side, the type of organization is normally assigned as well. And the business side, it's not assigned. Again, with collaboration, usually discouraged on the academic side. And on the business side, collaboration is permitted, usually encouraged. So there's a few tips for academic versus business. When it comes to communication, Abraham Lincoln had some communication principles, and this comes from Donald T. Phillips' book, Lincoln on Leadership. This was required reading for professional military education in the Air Force, so I thought I'd put it up here, because I thought each and every one of you might benefit from it, hopefully. So number one, be your organization's best speaker with colorful character and wit. After listening to this, I might have to go back and rethink how I give presentations, but we'll see. Extemporaneous speaking is your avenue to the public. So what he's saying is get out there. And extemporaneous means it's planned, it's prepared, it's well thought out. It's your avenue to the public. So if you can speak to the public and they can understand you, then they can relate to you. Use a variety of body language when you speak. So you don't want to be like a robot. Again, use a variety of body language. Prepare yourself thoroughly for public speaking engagements. Never consider anything you write to be finished until published, or if it's a speech, until you deliver it. I like this one because this goes along the lines of getting the feedback. Fight for feedback. Fight, fight, fight. Remember, there are times when you should simply not speak. So again, he's talking about your ability to listen. This is Abraham Lincoln way back in the day. He's saying, hey, kindly let me be silent. He wants to hear the message. Try not to make mistakes when you speak publicly, because everything you say is intently heard, especially by the media today. And they do sound bites, which is even worse. So they're taking sound bites from what you said and then smash them all together to make it really sound like something else altogether. So you have to be ready for that one if you become quite the public figure. So a mistake doesn't merely affect you, it affects your whole organization as well. And we're talking about you as either a student or an employee here at TWU. You're a reflection of TWU when you step off campus. Someone knows you go to school here or you work here. How you communicate, how you behave is a reflection of this campus. Whether you like it or not, it certainly is. And how do campuses get that high notoriety? You know, those Ivy League schools, how do they get that high notoriety? Well, certainly by the product that they put out. All right, certainly there's money behind the name, but besides that, there's something to that person that graduates from that school. So you do have some control over that. Be the impeccable product when you go out to the workforce. And number 8, we should often couple written documents with verbal discussions, catching the idea with 2 senses rather than 1. So your audience will at least remember it better if they don't understand it better. Okay, so finally we're into electronic communication tips. There's a number of ways to communicate electronically. I don't even have, well, it's sort of a Skype on there. That's really a chat, but I guess it looks like a Skype. Twitter, Skype, blogging, statuses, text messages. I still can't type very well with my thumbs, but I'm learning. I usually just one finger hit the keys. So electronic communications come in a variety of choices. But we're going to talk about email. I know that most students don't use email. I know because trying to get a hold of my own daughter on email was almost impossible. Dad, I don't check email. I have one, but I never look at it. Certainly when it came time to come to college, then for many freshmen, they had to go, oh, I need to start checking my email. Oh, all right, I guess I better check it. So when you get into the business world, email will become a primary tool for you. Probably not your text messaging. It's going to be your email. So here's some advantages. Number 1, it's fast. Get to many people at once, and it's paperless. That's great because we're looking for green solutions. Disadvantages, it's fast. If it's quickly written, if it's an emotionally charged email, it can spread wildfires. So if you didn't take the time to calm down, have someone look at it, review it, fight for feedback, and you're sending it off, and you're charged and you're angry, look out, because it's probably going to come back tenfold. And I did learn a lesson about midway through my career when I sent an email out angry. I quickly read it over after I already sent it, and then I sent another email to the same person. This was a person several ranks above me, and I was apologizing for the email I previously wrote, stating that it didn't state what I intended it to say, and here's what I really meant to say, and it's a good thing he had his email listed in date received order, time received order, time stamp order. Because he read the apology first before he read the bad one. And he told me, it's a good thing I read the apology first. Otherwise, we'd be having a different conversation. And I said, well, I didn't say I was upset. I just, the second one was what I truly meant. Okay, so it can get to more people. That's a disadvantage. It can get to more people. Too many copies can clog the network. And, you know, it can be forwarded. It's electronic. It's easy. Just hit forward to other people. Maybe you intended it to go to a certain group, but somebody in that group said, oh, let me send it to this group or this person. So that's a big disadvantage. And a big disadvantage is it is paperless. It's digital. It does leave an electronic trail. So there you go. I mean, it's got your fingerprints on it. So, and then of course, since it's electronic, power fluctuations, you could lose your work, so on and so forth. But email is a business way to communicate. If you don't know how to use Outlook, it's probably a good idea if you start learning how to use Outlook, because it's used by a lot of companies. So having that on your resume would probably be an advantage. Some email considerations. So here's some netiquette. So we're talking about internet etiquette. 1, be clear and concise. The subject line needs to communicate your purpose. So this is really, we're talking about the business part right here. This is getting out of the school environment.
And let me just comment on that. I've had previous student assistants work in our office who sometimes send emails and they don't have a subject line. And that is kind of, it kind of drives me crazy, to be honest with you. I'm like, is this something that, because I look at, I'm sure others do too, look at the subject line to determine, do I need to get to this message right now? And I'm like, I have no idea what this message is. So do include a subject in your emails.
Right. It's very important because it may be deleted if it doesn't have a subject line. Lead with your most important information. Because remember, like I said, if you're talking to someone above you, chain of command-wise, they might just delete it altogether. Boring, click. All right, because it's not getting to the point. Use topic sentences. It's the same way you would construct a very powerful, well-written paper. Be brief, but stick to the point. If available, use bold. Use italics or color to emphasize key ideas within a sentence or even key sentences. Don't overuse that, because then the whole thing is bold. It's like highlighting everything in your book when you're trying to study for a test. All right, well, everything's highlighted. What's important? I don't know, because it's all highlighted. And then choose readable font. Normally a 12-point or larger, not huge. A 12-point or larger is fine. Rule two, watch your tone. There is tone in an email. So what you have to do is construct this email knowing that the other person does not know the mental state that you are in. You don't know the mental state he or she is in. So what I have to do is kind of paint that picture, all the while being clear and concise. So now it's becoming more of a challenge. So you do want to be polite. Be careful with too much of a sense of humor, using irony or sarcasm. I mean, those are all good things, but you want to be very cautious if you're not familiar with the audience or the folks receiving this. If it becomes a personal email, you can get away with humor, irony, and sarcasm because you know that individual very well. But if it's with a work environment or with business, just avoid it altogether. The don't shout, the all caps. I don't know if folks in here do this, but if you are using all caps, please stop using all caps. It's considered rude. It means that you're shouting. And so negative connotations there. Always keep your emails clean and professional, because remember, your emails can easily be forwarded. So I would say start getting into that habit now, even with your personal emails. And don't send anything in haste. I already beat that one in the ground with my story. Don't email angry. Rule three, be selective about what messages you send. Be careful when it becomes controversial, sensitive, and certainly don't send classified information. We have to talk about that over and over here. As a business, it's bad publicity if classified information gets out, or if any business or college releases Social Security numbers. Don't create junk or forward junk email. We get enough already here on campus. And we do have spam filters, but hey, they're only so good. Don't create or forward those chain letters. You are not going to have bad luck for 7 days. You're not going to be unpatriotic, and you're not going to be unspiritual if you don't forward this email. But these are triggers. These are emotional triggers for the spammers out there to get you to do this. And A, it just disrupts service because it clutters the network, but there could be something malicious attached to that chain letter as well. Don't use business email for your personal ads. Most people allow moderate personal use for business emails, but when you start advertising your business, your personal business on your company time, it can get you fired. And don't fire or promote someone by email. That's a very personal thing. You want to do that in person. Rule four, be selective about who gets the message. Reply to specific addressees. Use that reply all cautiously. I would say cautiously instead of sparingly. I should change those words, because reply all can really get out of control. And like I said, I know I've got a couple IT folks in here. There have been situations on campus where one email went out, reply to all, but there was something wrong with the email, so the senders were replying all back, and then it got into a big ping pong game of what was wrong back and forth through reply to all. But that's going to over 2,000 people each time it's replied to all, and so that builds and builds and builds. Okay. Get permission before using large mail groups. All right, again, this is, we're talking business use here. And then double check the address before sending, especially when selecting from a global list, because you could be sending it to the wrong Jones or Johnson. Those are very common names. And for people that have the same last name, it can be very embarrassing, especially if you gave very personal information in that email, or if you used inappropriate content in that email and it went to the wrong person. Rule 5, check your attachments and support material. Ensure that all information is provided the first time to keep you from having to repeat emails. Critical there. Before sending, check that you actually attach the supporting documents, because that's very embarrassing. Here, here's the document you wanted. What document? Well, the document you wanted. There is no document. Oh, it's very embarrassing. And again, don't create a... Oh, I need to redo that. Like other forms of writing, cite quotes, references, and sources. But hey, it's a nice reminder here. Don't forward chain letters. I should have put in every single one of them. All right, rule 6, keep your email under control. Sign off the computer when you leave your workstation. Even as a student, if you're in one of the labs and you're logged in, log off, and leave. Even if you're coming right back. It's just a good rule of thumb just to get used to right away. Create mailing lists to save time. Get permission for using large mail groups. Read then trash unneeded files daily. This is to keep your email from filling up and then getting that message that everyone gets, sorry, this is undeliverable because the recipient's mailbox is full. Create an organized directory on your hard drive to keep the your email inbox to a minimum, and acknowledge important or time-sensitive message with a quick reply to tell the sender that you've done it. Thanks. We're all started on it right away, but it just gives them an idea that you've acknowledged it, because electronics are great, but they are flawed. They're not perfect. So it helps the sender know that you've at least received the email. There are tools on there that can acknowledge that someone has opened your email. But in case you're working with a system that doesn't have that, make that acknowledgement for them.
Question.
Yes.
When I sent one to my professor, it had to acknowledge, they had to specifically acknowledge that when I was in the workplace and had the same Outlook or whatever, it just automatically did it. Is it just set up that way?
There's probably one was within the network, so they received a receipt by sender.
Yeah.
And one perhaps was outside of the network.
Okay.
And I don't know, did you use your personal email with the second one?
Well, this is different times. I just mean like, when I was in the workforce, I could do that and send it, and it would just, you know, they didn't have to actually fill out or, you know, click anything. They would just automatically do it.
It could have been set up already on that for you, but there is a setting in there in Outlook for you to go and ask for a receipt of message. And so the next place you go, if you didn't go and set it yourself, it may not have been set up that way for you. I used to use that with my cadets all the time. And then when they come and they would say, well, I never got your email. Well, yes, you did, because I saw on this date and this time, I got a receipt that you at least opened this email. Oops. And then it's really bad for cadets at the Air Force Academy because they're under the honor code. And so they're immediately running right down, sir, what is it I could do? I could do this whole thing right away. I'm just really sorry. You know, and then they're really stressing out because any honor violations for them gets them kicked out of college. One honor violation can get them kicked out. It's a trust issue. Your officers in the military have to have the strict and utmost level of loyalty and trust because, you know, they're the officers. Okay, we're going to look at common email blunders and then wrap this up because I think we're right on schedule. Unclear subject lines. or no subject at all, a poor greeting or none at all, unfamiliar abbreviations, unnecessary copies. You've CC'd a million people that don't need it. Sloppy grammar, spelling, and punctuation. Eat your grammar O's. All caps are used in the message. We talked about that. That means shouting. No closing or sign-off. Just being impolite. Maybe you're rambling. It's unformatted. That's just being sloppy. An unfriendly tone. Again, you're just being rude. No clear request for action. Just vague. No clarity. This comes from Customer Service for Dummies. All right. What we take a look at today was effective listening, business writing tips, and electronic communication tips. Certainly had some good questions during the class, but do we have any? I think we've got a few minutes for questions if there are any questions from the group. Yes?
When it comes to writing blocks, what could you do to keep yourself focused when it's something you're listening to that you don't understand? Like, that you're trying to interpret, but you don't understand like so much of it that a block.
Are you saying you have a block that you can't write material because you can't think, or is it a listening block?
It's just, I don't know. I guess if I write and listen at the same time, things get skipped and jumbled because it's kind of like half listening because you're okay. Still writing what he said.
Right. And I've been there. So what I've had to do on occasion is either record while I'm writing or stop, put my pen down, and just listen. And just listen and see what I'm able to retain by being as focused as I can possibly be, hanging on every single word that that instructor's saying. Because I've struggled in different classes with the same issue. Someone with those higher level science classes that I was just completely lost. But combined, recording, listening, pen down with complete focus, and a study group all together were things that added to my success to get through the most difficult classes. So I had to use a combination of tactics. But I'm telling you, it's tough, especially if you're fatigued from either the night before, maybe on the edge of getting a flu or sickness, or maybe just out too late with the gang. But in any case, it's a combination of things. So sometimes, maybe just put the pen down aside and hang on every word, but engage in that conversation. Hopefully it's an instructor that allows you the opportunity to ask questions. I'm not sure, I'm pretty sure here on campus that's encouraged. So get some interaction back and forth. I heard you say this, is that what you really meant? Okay, well yes, it is. Or no, you're not understanding it quite right, and this is what I meant. And so hopefully then you can get some clear understanding during the course of a lecture. Now, certainly be aware that everyone may have questions, so don't hog all the questions, but just be considerate, but assertive enough to ask if you need some clarity. Did that hopefully answer your question? Mm-hmm. Yes. Would you tell me if it didn't?
I have to go try it out.
Okay. Good answer. All right, so actually there was my question screen. Some resources there. Most of this came from the Air Force Handbook 33337, the tongue and quill. You can check these out. I will have this email over to Career Services, or this presentation, I'll email one over to Career Services. You can get it from there. I'll also post it, or you guys can post it someplace, maybe on your site.
We're going to post it on our webpage.
Okay.
Right where we have the seminars listed.
And then we'll maybe listen to the podcast and see how clear it is from over here. The microphone's here, and that's over there, so I don't know how that came out. Okay, wonderful. Thanks for coming, Dan.
All right, thank you.